This is Michael. You're listening to Models of Masters, and I'm so grateful you're here. I'm breaking down personal stories, learned wisdom, and pieces of insight I hope can help you along your journey. Head over to my website, michaelbecker.org, for much more. And with that, let's get right into the show. All right, today I'm joined by Haley Kalani McDonald, who has a very unique and interesting story I'm excited to dig into. And for Haley, it turns out that becoming an astronaut, which was her childhood dream, involves a lot of math. And that's when she decided to move her inherent curiosity in a different direction and noticed some missing links along the way. She found that it's all too common for owners, leaders, and teams to feel stressed, unfocused, or stuck. Teams often find it challenging to keep up with a never-ending cycle of mounting marketing projects, continuous challenges, and trends that seem to pile up higher each week. Thinking big, solving problems, grabbing attention, and working efficiently has been Haley's specialty since she was a kid. So finding new ways to sneak candy at night, being the go-to friend for others in need, and always in pursuit of innovation are themes that she is more than familiar with. While growing up with and beating aplastic anemia, which is a life-threatening autoimmune disease, Haley had the chance to experience life from a perspective not many others have had. The whole experience itself taught her to never settle for less and to live life as though there's no tomorrow. Ever since, she's followed her passion to use her unique gifts and help companies position themselves to create more impact, quicker innovation, and higher income. And she does this by working with marketing teams to simplify the creation and collaboration process so that they can launch projects faster and get more valuable work done, which we are going to talk about throughout this conversation, and the result that she helps her teams and clients achieve, which is a happier, more profitable, more harmonized marketing team that can solve problems better for clients and tackle any opportunities with ease, which is something that we all want. Haley, I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, what an interesting kind of background and story that you have. And we're going to dig into how what you went through has led you to where you are, and then how you really help and coach the clients that you work with. But where I'd love to start off with this conversation is kind of the black elephant in the room, if you will. And I would love to ask you in as much or little detail as you want to give about the autoimmune condition that you went through and how that came about. But more importantly, like, what that taught you and showed you about yourself as you kind of went through that process.
Yeah, so it was kind of a crazy thing to go through as a child, essentially. It made me grow up really, really quickly. And it all started, I was just a kid in elementary school, and I had this like intense bruising, and the bruising would come from, you know, knocking my hip into a desk, not even hard, or like playing basketball and it would hit my arm, and then just massive baseball sized bruises would appear. And so teachers first noticed, and my parents first noticed, and were coming to me like, are you okay? Like, they basically thought I was getting beaten. And I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? I have no clue. And I was just a kid, so I didn't really question many things like that. I just thought, well, it is what it is. And so my mom, she took me to the doctor's office, and it was happened to be on Valentine's Day. And the night before, you know, when you're in elementary school, you make those like Valentine's, what are they, boxes where you drop the little cards into there and stuff. And we had I don't know if it was a competition or just for fun, but we were in charge as kids of like making the coolest little Valentine's box there is. So I had created this like alien one, and I was so excited to go to the school the next day and show everybody. But I had the doctor's appointment that morning. So I woke up, went to the doctor. I thought it'll be a checkup, go to school, get my candy, come home, everything's all good. But at the doctor's office, they did the standard procedure, you know, check my heartbeat, all that stuff. And then started to look at the bruising. And I also had what was called petechiae. And it's essentially what I then found out was popped blood vessels underneath the skin. And it would happen just with a minor scratch of the arm, it would just be petechiae everywhere. And after that, they had called in all of the other doctors and pediatricians in the office to come take a look. And that's when I was like, this is not normal. That doesn't normally ever happen. So they had me do, maybe it's TMI, but had me go like pee in a cup, blah, blah, blah. And I remember peeing straight blood. And it was terrifying. And I came back into the room and started crying in front of my mom. And she was nervous too, because we just had no idea what was happening. And so the doctor comes in and says, you need to go to the hospital right now. Here's a doctor that you're going to go see, and you need more tests done, basically. So instead of going back to school and getting my Valentine's, I wound up staying in the hospital for what became like 2, 3, 4 days. And after numerous testing, I had this incredible doctor who was super sweet and all of these great nurses, but they sat us down and they said, look, your child has aplastic anemia, which is a life-threatening autoimmune disease. Very rare. We don't really know what it comes from or why it happens, but the cells inside of her body are attacking each other. So it was, to put it into perspective, similar to leukemia or any other autoimmune disease. And my life really changed from that moment. You know, I because I was a kid, I didn't really understand the severity of it. I just kept thinking, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to see my friends again. And in hindsight, I really do think that that was a large catalyst for, even though I went through it for a period of 4 years, most of the cases of people who have aplastic anemia, it lasts for their entire lifetime. And for me, it was such a short experience that I think a large part of it, beyond the incredible doctors and all the things that we did, they did to help me, was just my mindset of like, well, it's not going to be forever. I'm going to be fine.
Right.
And that has carried with me through today of like, if I'm ever stuck or if I'm feeling frustrated or if I think things are super shitty, I'm just like, it's going to be better at some point. I don't know when, but nothing really lasts forever. So that's the approach that I've taken ever since then. And it really did change a whole lot of my perspective on life and relationships and mindset and a whole domino effect of things. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I'm a big believer as well in these abstract terms like destiny and you know, life scripts. I think that we do choose the things that we experience at a higher level to go through, especially the more significant things that come our way. And, you know, our soul wants to grow through us, through these challenges that it presents to us, or rather that we chose for ourselves, again, at a higher level. But I'm curious, what is your perspective on your purpose, and how did it evolve after having, I guess, come out the other side of that experience? And was there ever a moment of awakening that that came over you during the course of that?
You know, I don't think that there was ever a moment of awakening or a aha or an epiphany during that time. And I think it was just because I was so young, everything was kind of an epiphany, right? Like, you're still learning. So
how old were you? You were in middle school?
When I first got diagnosed, I was in elementary school, but I think I was in like fifth grade. So I was probably about 9, and then 8 or 9, and then it lasted through till I was about 11 or 12. And there wasn't anything specific that I can think back to or remember, but it was actually much later on when I was put into remission and I was like, cool, I'm like free, I can do whatever I want, that I started to wonder and be more curious about like purpose and why am I here. And I think that that's it matches with the age range too. That's where we start to figure out like, okay, what are we doing here, what is all of this stuff for? And a large part of it was I was on so much medication that they inevitably have side effects, and I blew up like a balloon. Like, I was like almost, I think I was like 140 pounds as a 10-year-old kid, and I'm 5'2", you know. So it's like I was overweight. I was going through this awkward phase in my middle school era, and people weren't very nice to me. And so I think that, in combination with aplastic anemia and going through it, really shaped my idea of who I want to be and how I think others should be treated, and the ripple effect that has on our life and other people's lives as a whole.
Right.
And eventually, I don't think it was any one moment, but just like everything in life, it's a series of very small moments that one day you wake up and you're like, oh, okay. And I think it was after I started getting into meditation a bit around my senior year of high school and then beyond, is wondering, why do good things happen and why do bad things happen? And does that even really matter, labeling them as good or bad? And the answers that I just kept coming up with were like, it doesn't really matter. And we give life meaning just by existing and having thoughts and opinions. Right. And so if I can be in control of my thoughts and opinions, that will give my life purpose. And which snowballed into me, as I was working in the music industry, actually at that time at a recording studio in Seattle. And I knew I had wanted to move into like an entrepreneurial direction. So when I was working at this recording studio, I was surrounded by really talented people, and they were really struggling to make any money off of what they were doing, including myself. And that got me curious about positioning. You know, it wasn't a matter of talent, it was a matter of attracting people to them, which snowballed into me learning about marketing and psychology and bringing people into like a loyal fan base or a family, which is how I actually got my start into marketing overall. But during that process, why I bring that up is, from an outside perspective, people are like, what are you doing? You're in fitness, you do music, you're in marketing. Like, they try and say this is the one thing that you should be doing. And I just thought, well, I have many interests, many passions, and I think I'm good at many different things. So if I can support other people through those passions and through those skills and through those ideas, that was my purpose, to just do what I was good at and have a positive impact on somebody else, which is a long-winded answer to what you were saying. Yeah.
There's an interesting phenomenon that I've witnessed within myself, but especially with others, after undergoing any sort of life-altering period of significance, it seems that there is a window that opens itself up to us for the opportunity to really shift and transform who we are as a person. And for me, it was a flowering of consciousness that invited me to start learning about topics that I'd never imagined before. But I love hearing how you just started exploring these different topics and different sort of modes of being and different facets of life and and lifestyle, especially, you know, looking into these different niches. And it's really interesting to hear how this experience led you to those.
Yeah. When was the period of time where you went through that flowering of consciousness? What age was that?
Yeah, it was actually more recent, back in late 2018, and then really kind of getting it initiated in 2019. So I was late 20s when that happened for me.
Was there anything in particular going on in your life at that time that you look back on and you think had supported that, or it was just almost in some sense, for lack of a better word, random?
That's such a great question. You know what, in hindsight, like, so when I was undergoing it, I didn't really have the presence of mind to look at the surrounding circumstances and be like, what catalyzed this? I was with an ex-girlfriend at the time, and we had kind of started the journey together. So that's kind of what I attributed it to. But looking back now, I think what there was even more than that was this background and mounting pressure that I was feeling internally, that I don't even know if I vocalized it or was aware of it myself back then, but just kind of a general sense of dissatisfaction with the path that I was on and that had been laid out for me. I was working in a corporate job that it was just like, meh, it was okay. It wasn't something that I loved or that I was passionate about, but I was so conditioned and programmed by that path that I didn't really think to question it or to look outside of it and say, what are these other options and what are other people doing out there and how are they doing it? I was just kind of living in my own lane. And for me, like, there was definitely periods of pain. A lot of it was related to relationship and struggling to find what I thought that I needed or wanted at the time. And a lot of going out and partying and drinking and all that stuff throughout my 20s that I think just wasn't beneficial, and was in hindsight, like, I actually got a DUI in 2015, and I think that was an opportunity for me to, you know, turn my head and kind of wake up. And I didn't do so fully at that time. And so a few years later, I think the door had been opened, and finally I was able to kind of come out of that stupor and see the sun.
Yeah, so. It's interesting how life happens that way, where it gives us many different opportunities to right. go on different paths throughout your week, month, year. And it is up to us to either see it and follow through and say, oh, there it is. Like, I can start this different direction right. or not, right? Because there's no wrong decision. It's just that I think you touched on it before, and I don't know, I don't think of myself as necessarily religious, but more so spiritual in some sense, where I do believe that life is in some way, shape, or form guiding us towards a positive direction. Okay. And there's always those opportunities that come up, whether we see them and follow them or not, that are just there, which is really exciting. And for anybody who is in a really unsatisfactory or frustrating or tough time, hopefully that could serve as a way to say, okay, cool, there's an opportunity for me either here right now or coming soon to help me get out of this.
Right. Yeah, and there's another interesting thing that I've discovered kind of looking back through those more difficult periods, in that when you're in them, they are not fun and they don't necessarily feel expansive. But when you think back on the trials and tribulations of life, this is for anyone listening, when you really feel into those, now having come out of them months or years down the line, don't they feel sweet? And some may be bittersweet and some may be sweet. Like, the good times may be sweet, but the bad times, you made it and you survived it. And there's a certain flavor to any experience that we come out of that takes on a richer quality, I think, as time passes. And to your point, Haley, that you brought up earlier, I don't think anything is bad, and I don't really think anything's good. I just think life wants us to experience a spectrum of emotions and experiences to allow us to really feel and see who we are against the backdrop of those. And so something else that I've kind of been looking at myself, and an interesting thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of
very interesting.
There's a lot of power in pain, and I guess also in pleasure. You know, if we can always come back to kind of seeking growth and an expanded perspective through both of those things, and creativity, which is something that I know we're both super passionate about, is another skill or quality that I believe can be ignited through experience. And I'm wondering, for you, kind of leading into the whole business and entrepreneurship side of things, which is where you took your journey in the years that would follow, like, how have you seen your creative faculties, I guess, start to blossom and come forth more after coming out of that chapter?
You know, it's funny, because I think that there was a period of time where I at least felt like my creativity was starting to diminish. Mm. Like, I started feeling more constrained in my creativity. And I think that when we are in periods of transition or stress. Frustration, yep, stressed, it's hard to be creative. And neurologically, that's just the truth, right? Like, we are not releasing the right chemicals, like, we're overthinking, all of that stuff. And so it was through the act of really finding things that brought me joy and pursuing those more often that helped unveil, like, this false sense that I had about, oh, maybe creativity is just what I had as a kid, and now that's not really useful in the real world. And now, after, you know, meditating and doing things that bring me joy, I've come to remember that it is a huge skill. And I think that it's the most important skill that a human being can have, because by nature, we are creators. We create everything. We create conversations, we create connection, we create emotions, relationships, and beyond the things that aren't tangible, we create tangible things, right? Like products and services and inventions and things that are able to better the world. And, you know, I'm trying to remember what your exact question is so I can answer it, but creativity is something that we inherently have, but we can also strengthen.
Yes.
If we feel like we're not good at it, right? Like, people say, like, oh, I'm not creative. And I think a lot of the times when people think of creativity, they think of art, like painting, singing, music, like all of the other stuff. And those are acts of creativity. Yeah. But my definition is really just the act of thinking differently. And if you become curious enough and ask enough questions, that's creativity already.
there's a thing called divergent thinking, and most people are convergent thinkers, which means that they tend to seek and assume that there's only one correct answer or one lane that is the right lane. But the most creative people in the world look for multiple answers and know that there are multiple ways to get to a solution. And that's one of the most important qualities that we can have when it comes to creativity as well. And another thing that I've found with that is everyone's creative. You're right, we're all creators, and everything that we do, everything that we paint upon the canvas of life is an act of creation. But it really comes down to being able to, I think, direct or tailor or apply that creativity toward sort of what's called your ikigai, which is this Japanese word for purpose. And that's kind of the center point of what you love, what you're good at, and what the world needs. And so I'm interested for you in kind of making that that transition to client work with what you're doing now. Like, can you kind of talk about how your present role, how you created your present role, and how you're able to apply your creative abilities to create those results for clients?
Yeah. So I started, when I first started my business, I was actually doing a lot of done for you work. So I was doing the advertising, the copywriting, the videos, the social media management, like everything. Right. And it was a great foundation because I learned so much through the act of experimentation and actually being hands-on with it. But I realized that I had so much more leverage, and the company that I was working with would benefit so much more if the strategy behind the execution of whatever campaign project we were working on was a little bit different. And by different, I mean typically a more creative, more innovative in some way. And so that's when I shifted into the role of consulting. And when it comes to working with people or marketing teams and businesses, the main thing that I try and focus on with them is how can we highlight you as a brand? Like, how can we create a personality behind the logo, right, of the company, essentially? Like, a lot of businesses, you know, if it's a service-based business and it's a small local business, sometimes you will have a face to the company. But for large brands or B2B brands, most of the time there isn't a face to the company. But creating that personality behind the faceless brand is something that I strive to work on really hard with the teams that I come across. And the reason being is we are humans and we build relationships with other people. And so if we can create that personality for the brand, then the relationship from customer to brand will be much stronger. And if we look at examples like, you know, Duolingo is doing a great job and they have a mascot, so it's a little bit easier, right? But if you look at like their TikToks, like, people love the Duolingo owl. Why? Because it's got a personality. And regardless of what the app does, right, like, you're learning languages and stuff, which is great, but people are attracted to it and think of that first because there's an element of relationship already built without ever having to talk to a real person.
Right. And I just published an episode about this. That's something that AI can't do and that it won't be able to do well anytime soon. And so the advantage goes to real humans that can figure out creative ways to connect with other real humans in ways that are human. And the more you're able to do that as a marketer, a consultant, a business owner, the more leverage you will have and the greater advantage you'll have in the marketplace over other companies or the firms that are deploying those AI solutions to try to tackle those projects or areas of business, because they're not going to do it as well. And I think we're still in a point where, like, if somebody tries to automate something or use AI on something, really astute, detail-oriented people can tell. Like, you can still tell when somebody's doing that. And so the skills that you're talking about in telling the story behind the brand and forging those real connections are, I think, becoming more and more higher fidelity skills in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I think, well, actually, it led me to a question that I had earlier when you first started talking about AI piece of it, is where do you think that we can leverage AI the most in specifically creative fields for things that are already seemingly being replaced, like copywriters or video editors, and leveraging it as a tool versus, you know, something that's just overtaking a job? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, such a good question, right? I think, to your point, like, people like copywriters and people that if you do any sort of repetitive, menial writing or even ideation process, because ChatGPT, it does more than just write content now. It's literally able to come up with ideas and strategize. And if you've used it, you know that you can ask it to churn out 50 ideas for names or topics or ideas for a campaign, and it'll do so in 10-15 seconds. And so what that is doing, it is compressing the market space, and the available the people that are available in the market that used to do those things are now going to be phased out and or forced to find different skills. And so the biggest thing we need to be thinking about as marketers and consultants ourselves, I think, is how do we upskill ourselves above and beyond what the AI is doing, and what are the areas, again, that it's not as good at. And there's a lot of tools that are coming out that can do video, but they're not there yet, in my view, of like what we can do and like what we're doing here, Haley. Like, AI can't do this. And so how can you create a differentiated skill set that is more human, more and more and more human by the day, is going to set you apart. But things like copywriting, you know, even coming up with topics, stories, campaign ideas, like we should be supplementing AI to help us with those things. And again, people that used to rely on those skill sets are going to be phased out. So that's kind of my perspective on that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to what we were just talking about, which is like that human to human relationship and how AI can actually help us do that easier. Yeah. And whether that's freeing up our time so that we can do things like this, so be it. Or what? I was listening to this podcast episode. I think it was the Joe Rogan podcast, and I don't know who the guest was, unfortunately, but he was talking about how at some point, you know, technology is going to advance so much that the jobs, things that are task related, can just be done by AI, robots, like whatever. And humans will resort to essentially just entertaining each other. Everything will be a form of creativity and entertainment. And so, like this whole episode on creativity, leveraging that as a skill is now more valuable than ever, because the creative aspect of human to human relationships, contact, entertainment, that's what's actually engaging to us. Like, nobody wants to watch two AIs just like talk to each other, you know? And so the more that we can create and honestly just have fun and involve other humans in that fun, I think that AI will be irrelevant to taking over jobs and stuff, as long as your career path or what you want to do or how you want to monetize your skills is in relation to bringing other people into your sphere of fun.
Right. And what I'm hearing when you describe that is basically, and I'm translating this now to more of like a social media context, user-generated content, going live with other people and co-producing or collaborating to create human content. Telling personal stories in the way that we're doing today is something that no machine will be able to do if it doesn't have that context or the ability to reach back in and pull that experience forth. Are there any social media trends or tactics that you are really keen on and that you see kind of coming to the forefront moving forward?
The biggest thing that I see working extremely well, which has always worked well, but I think more influencers, more creators, and more companies actually are starting to really double down and put time, money, and energy into this, is involving the audience in the decision-making process, in the creative process, in just conversation. Like, if your audience has a say in your product or in your service or your next campaign, or like you said, live streams, the involving of those two people, or the brand and the audience, is the biggest trend that I see and the most valuable trend that I see. Beyond, you know, when we think of trends, I think we think of trending sounds and like video ideas, which are great, but they always eventually fade out. But what doesn't fade out is building a really solid connection and relationship with people. And Ryan Serhant says, you know, people don't like being sold to, they like shopping with friends. And brands need to become a friend to their audience. And friends have conversations, friends give each other advice, friends, you know, they do fun stuff together. And I think that we will see more events happening around brands and audiences coming together. We will see more live streams, Q&As. We will see more stuff, not from just B2C, which we're already seeing, but B2B as well, which I think is hugely important. And B2B is falling behind in that trend.
Yeah, something I've been thinking a lot about too is like customer activation. And I'm seeing a lot of, I guess, more solopreneurs, coaches, and consultants, but also some brands are starting to move into this too, is creating communities or forums that can kind of serve as these waterfall type communities, meaning you create the thing once, but then you can tap it over and over again to provide value. And it serves as a two-way exchange. And like LinkedIn groups, I think, could be one high leverage format for B2B groups around, or B2B companies around that. For B2C and the solopreneurs, like Facebook groups obviously have really started to I guess, I think they're probably just past their prime in terms of maybe effectiveness, but I think the opportunity is still there. And then, you know, tactics like webinars and I think are still very much alive, where you can bring people together and it can be a value additive, but also collaborative community space. And so that's really a couple things that I'm seeing as well. And just tying that in as well to driving business and ROI, right? Those, I think, the companies that can commit to investing in projects like that, that maybe don't have a direct tie to revenue or an immediate sales outcome. Some of them might, like sales webinars can be tied to that, and conversations from, say, Facebook groups, you know, you can definitely tie back. But the brands that are willing to kind of invest in those plays are going to be the ones that I think win in the long term. But in terms of driving ROI and making those decisions, how do you kind of think about and consult the companies that you work with around really driving business forward in those ways?
Mm-hmm. The main thing is getting in alignment on short-term objectives versus long-term objectives. And I think everybody wants the long-term objective, but often we default to looking at the short-term numbers on if we're actually making progress to get there. But just like life, things go up and down.
Yeah.
Every day, every week, every month, every year. And as long as year over year, you're seeing some progress, even if you have a 2-year period where things were, you know, 10% worse than the year before, but over the 5-year span, it's 50% better or 20% better. You're like, okay, cool, you're growing. And so the first thing that I try and align people on is that long-term vision. And especially when we are focusing on social media or content creation or building that community, one thing that I really love and would love to do more often is have the actual team members within the company, whether it's the marketing department or not, get involved on social media and start interacting with their audience, even though they're not the CEO, they're not, you know, the founder, they're not the owner. It doesn't matter. But especially like what we were talking about before with those faceless brands, start having your employees create brands for themselves under the company, so that not only are they benefiting and they feel like they're working towards something, towards the same company long-term goal, but the company's benefiting as well because they have this unmatchable connection with certain people. It's just like characters in a TV show, right? Like if you think of your favorite TV show, we have favorites. And we like different characters for different reasons. And if we can build that within a company, oh my gosh, the fan base that you're going to create not only is specific to whatever you curate and whoever buys most from you, but will stay for the long term. And we'll have something to talk about too, right? Because we have Reddit forums and we have a whole TikTok series and like all just talking about these TV shows. And so if we can create that for a brand, that's huge.
I think there's also an opportunity for any company, B2B, B2C, B2B2C. If you're a solopreneur and you're working with even assistants, you should be creating a company culture where your employees are empowered to create those connections, to dive into those community spaces, and especially to be creating content. Like if I'm running a company right now, I'm telling my team, if you have any downtime, like think about how you can create content, self-recorded content, like get a selfie stick and record yourself going through a day in the life, or, you know, taking those slice of lives. And you know, how can we create a way that we can bring those together and turn them into shorts or reels or post those things on YouTube and push them out to the community. And then, you know, I think it's just a matter of like systematizing that and we live in this social world where it's like, I think for the first time ever, Haley, and love your thoughts on this too, is like, you can't have too much content. There's a such thing as bad content, and you can certainly be putting out content that's detrimental to your brand, but you can't have an overabundance of content. And the brands that understand that, and that I think empower their teams or the clients and their customers to co-create that content with them, and it doesn't have to be formal, it doesn't have to be super professional, it's like they're gonna have an edge in the market as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They will have a huge competitive edge, because beyond the relationship building with audience, you have so much more data than your competitors if you do that. And if you are creating that much content, you know what works, you know what people love, and you know when you go to spend money on a campaign, you're like, this is for sure going to be profitable because we did it for free or borderline free on organic social media. That it's a no-brainer. Like, let's double down on this advertising campaign or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been a great conversation. I think that is all of the questions that I had for you, but is there anything or any topics that we didn't get to today that you wanted to make sure that we did or that I didn't ask about?
Oh man, we talked about so much. We got into the spiritual side, we got into a couple of tactical things, and we meshed the two together. One thing that I enjoyed that you said before was divergent thinking, and I just wanted to end cap that with the convergent thinking piece of, we really need both to really get the full benefit of creativity, because creativity by itself is so expansive that there's not a whole lot to grasp onto. But when you mesh that with the processes, the structured ideation of the convergent thinking and assigning tasks, projects, delegating things on the convergent side, that's when we're bridging that gap between idea and actually turning it into a real thing. Just wanted to end cap that. But no, this conversation has been incredible, and I'm glad that we were able to have it together.
Me as well. And this is my last question, I promise. But I am curious, with your breadth of experience and the journey that you've gone through, what are one to two kind of takeaways or lessons that may be top of mind that you want to leave people with, in terms of, it could be anything, business or just resilience and pushing forward, anything that you just kind of want to like leave people with is tips or to-dos?
Yeah, I would say the first one is go taste and try and test and play with and experiment with as many things as possible so that you are gaining inspiration and curiosity from those experiences, because those will unlock so many doors for you, whether they're just ideas, relationships, or, you know, opportunities that you can monetize. And the second thing would be along resilience, as you mentioned, and the classic cheesy quote, right? Like, there's no way to fail unless you quit. And if you just keep going, it doesn't matter if you fall down 5 years ago and it took you 5 years to get up, as long as you didn't quit, you can still continue to go. And, you know, I know that I'm saying that as a 25-year-old woman, but even at, you know, I'd love to live past 100, even at like 95, I'd love to still have that same mindset of like, whatever I wasn't able to do then or chose not to do, I can still do today, hopefully, if my body allows me. Just whatever you want to do, there's never a wrong time to do it. And you also will never be ready to do it. So just do it now.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't lose if you don't quit. I love that. Well, Haley, this has been incredible. Where can people go to connect with you and learn more about what you do?
Yeah. The best place is probably LinkedIn. You can find me under Haley Kalani MCD. And I post advice, tips, resources on LinkedIn, and you'll find my website and all the other cool stuff to connect with me on that platform.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this episode, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review, as I'm trying to spread these insights to as many people as possible, and everything helps. Also, connect with me on Instagram @workwithmichael. You can navigate to my link tree to find more resources and to check out other programs and content.
That is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. My book, Content Capitalist, is now on sale. You can visit my website, michaelbecker.org, to grab your copy. There's also a link in the description. And if you'd like to learn more about what me and my team at Neocore are building, you can visit our website, neocore.co. You can learn more there and join the waitlist for when we launch later this year.